Okay, today is November 19th, and we are trying to find who was Shmuel's, who is David's Navi, who would rebuke him. So, as I told you, Shmuel dies in Shmuel Aleph. He dies twice, once in chapter 25, once in chapter 28, and David is not king yet, so Shmuel can't give Musar to King David because the two never were really functioning at the same time. Of course, Shmuel crowned David king, but David was, of course, not functioning as king. I just that thought in mind for a moment, I'd like to digress to an Agadah that you may know from a Gemara in Meseches Megillah, Daf Yudal. It's a very famous Agadah, that when David asked for food from Nabal HaKarmeli in chapter 25, and Nabal refused him, that David came to kill him with his men, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we all know who saved the day, right?
Abigail.
Now this fits in what we're saying here, because Abigail is really the first person in Tanakh to rebuke David, right? Every king has to have like a rebuker. So this is where that Gemara, Daf Yudalid, is the Gemara that talks about all the prophets and the prophetesses, right? The Gemara on that Daf proves that Abigail was a Neviyah, a prophetess, because she told him, if you do this, you will never be king. This will be an everlasting stumbling block for you, and you will not be able to serve as king, either from a moral standpoint, right, or you'll simply be a murderer. Now, according to the Gemara, Abigail asked David, why do you want to kill my husband? So, what would David say?
Because he's an ingrate, and he's the king has a right to...
Okay, that's exactly what the Gemara says. Because the king has the right to demand for his men some provisions from locals. And if the locals turn down the king, he's married by Malchus. Right? So what obvious answer does she give him?
You're not king.
You have not... You're not king. There's someone else who's king. What right do you have to call yourself king at my husband's expense?
What sense does she use?
Lo yatsa teva shelcha. Your nature as king has not come out. If my husband thought you were king, he wouldn't have behaved this way. Well, moreover, David is putting him in danger. Doesn't David by that time know that whoever helps him is in mortal danger? You know, he doesn't remember that from the Kohanim? Right? So what? By what right does David feel that he can kill this man? So she tells him, you're not king yet, and he realizes that. David is magnanimous, easily persuaded, and he tells her, thank God you prevented me from doing this. Okay, and then he marries her. So that's the Gemara in Megillah. I think many of you are familiar with that. But there's a fascinating parallel to this source in Medrash Tehillim. Medrash Tehillim is the collection of Midrashim on each chapter of Tehillim. It's also known as Medrash Shocher Tov. It's a word in Sefer Mishnah. Medrash Tehillim in chapter 14, it's Medrash Tehillim chapter 14, it says that Abigail comes out to greet David as she heard that he wants to kill her husband, and she calls out and she says, HaMelech, Melech David! And she keeps calling him king, you're king, right? Please don't do this, this is not the right thing to do. And David, of course, says he's married to Malchus. And still she says, even if he's married to Malchus, you don't have the right to kill a man for this. Now that flies in the face of the Gemara. The Gemara in Sanhedrin says, a king who tells Uriah to go home, and he doesn't want to go home, he's married to Malchus. Right? And the king has the right to kill him for that. It's a social contract we signed, and what we did a few weeks ago when we said that we signed it with Yehoshua, remember? at the end of Perek Aleph of Sefer Yehoshua. So what's happening is that Medrash Shulchan Aruch is a very late Medrash, and it's trying to be a little more enlightened. It's trying to be more enlightened. It's saying, even if David is king, this is not proper behavior to kill Nabal and his household. Right? Okay, so the first person to rebuke David is Abigail. She is very respectful, right? She speaks in third person. She even hints how she would love to be a person who would wash his feet, which I think in that circumstance, in that situation, is a euphemism for "I'd like to marry you." Mm-hmm. Right? When David tells Uriah, "You've been at war for some time. Go home and wash your feet." You know, he's telling him to make sure that you spend time with your wife, so that if 7, 8.5 to 9 months later, when she gives birth, you'll remember that you spent time with her. Right? I'm not saying that every time that a man tells guests to wash their feet, that that's what it means, because if there is a good reason for people who are traveling
like
out in the desert,
yes,
and right. guests, and it's in the heat of the day.
So it
does make sense to tell them to cool yourself down by washing your feet. Okay, so that's Abigail. Now we're looking at Yoav. We started with Yoav last week. He is the oldest son of David's sister, probably a much older sister, since David's the youngest in the family. This is not simply drash; it's explicitly mentioned in Divrei Hayamim that David had a sister named Tzruya, and she had three sons: Yoav, Asael, and Avishai. Right? And we discussed last week that Asael's death at the hands of Avner made a natural enemy of these two. Okay? And we left off last time that David cursed Yoav for what he did to Avner, because it looked to the average Israelite that David is the one who ordered the hit on Avner after making a peace pact. You could be king of Israel, but it doesn't look good in the report when the reporters say that you made a peace pact and the next day you had him killed. Okay, all right. Even in a monarchy, but that's an ancient world where things like that went on quite often. In a monarchy, the people still expect you to be fair. Yeah? Okay. All right, so what we left off last time with how Yoav became David's trusted, the head of his army, is not in Sefer Shmuel, but in Sefer Divrei Hayamim. In Divrei Hayamim, it says that David, in the conquest of Yerushalayim, said, "Whoever can cut off the water supply of the Jebusites, he will head our army." So you might have taken some tours of the tunnels in Yerushalayim. They'll tell you exactly where this was done today, where they think it was done, and how Yoav even climbed the walls in order to get there to do so. Yerushalayim has a very, very stingy water supply, so cutting off the water supply of the enemy is likely to be a tactic to win the battle. Yes.
Did they cut the water, or did he just enter and open the doors?
What they do is they actually cut off, stopped up a supply, and the supply line was rather. Very small. It was you can see these places now on tours. Okay, so Yoav was the one who did this in Divrei Hayamim. In Shmuel Bet, the story is very cryptic about how the blind and the lame are part of a battle, and David doesn't like it, and he says, "Don't ever invite the crippled and the lame to my house." You know what I'm talking about? Ring a bell?
Mm-hmm.
It's really cryptic. Apparently, it mirrors a tactic of battle in the ancient world where you put in your front lines cripples and blind people so that the enemy would feel apprehensive about shooting arrows at them, and then the soldiers advance behind them, crouching behind them. All right, so David recognized that, you know, I can't lose this battle over this, and he fought against him. He shot at them. And then every time he saw a blind or a crippled person, he was reminded of this very unfortunate battle. And he, therefore, he says, I don't like to see them. It's a very, very strange and cryptic story. Okay, so Yoav becomes the chief of the army as a result of the conquest of Yerushalayim. Okay? And Yoav does not appear again until a very fateful battle. David wins every single battle in Divrei Hayamim and in Shmuel, and he is successful at everything he turns his hand to. He wins every battle until he arranges to lose one. And he sends the message of how to lose this battle with Uriah himself to give to Yoav, trusting that Uriah is not going to open up the letter and read it. Right? So he delivers the letter to Yoav. Is, you know, the king has the right to send any soldier he wants to a battlement, but when
other people with him,
and then 50 other men with him, and I'd like you to also understand that it's strategically foolish to send Uriah into that battle because of something we know later in Shmuel Bet. The 23rd chapter of Shmuel Bet lists David's top 37, that's how many there were, his top 37 officers in battle. Now, there was one war where David fought with 1,100,000 soldiers. It's the highest number in the Bible. And you can imagine, if you have 37 chief soldiers, that means each one of them is commanding a significant amount of soldiers, 50, 60,000 soldiers. We're under Uriah, because he's listed as one of the 37 soldiers. Uriah was not just a private, which explains why he wouldn't think it unusual that he's being called home from the front to report about the war, right? When David calls him home. You know what I'm talking about, right? So Uriah is a big shot. You don't put, you know, if you play Stratego, it's like bumping with a 3 or a 2 to see if something's a bomb, right? Well, today now, I heard Stratego now, the higher numbers are better. When I played, it was the lower numbers that were better, right? But you know what I'm saying? What do you bump into a bomb to see if it's a bomb with?
Eight.
Well, not an 8 in case it's not a bomb.
No, it's a minor.
The 8 is the only one that could take the bomb, right? You bump it with a 9. They're expendable. There are 8 of them, and you know, right? Sending Uriah to such a dangerous, hazardous battle doesn't make sense. But only one man in Israel knows that, is Yoav. So now this explains why Yoav is able to rebuke David in a way that really borders on chutzpah. Because if he got away with pulling an Avner once, it's amazing that he gets away with pulling it again. I'll explain. During the revolt of Avshalom, Avner is dead. Yoav, of course, sided with David and helped David defeat Avshalom. In fact, he did so in a way that directly defied an order of David. David ordered his men, do not kill La'at li la'na'ar, do not kill Avshalom. I want him captured, I want him brought home, but I do not want him killed. A soldier of Yoav's reports that he saw him stuck in a tree by his hair, right? The vain Avshalom, who had a knife in his hand, could have just sliced off his hair to free himself, but he was busy slowly trying to free himself with his hands, and the guy found him. So he reports to Yoav quickly, and Yoav tells him, and you didn't kill him? If you had killed him, I would have given you 10 silver pieces and given you a belt of gold. And he said, you could give me all the money you have in the world. I wouldn't defy the king's command. He goes, show me where he is. Maybe he thought he influenced Yoav, but he clearly didn't. When he showed him where he was, he took 10 men, and that's how many men it took to kill Avshalom. Mm-hmm. And they shot him with arrows, with darts, they clubbed him, they gave him what he deserved. So when David heard what had happened, he doesn't curse Yoav. Right? I'm not sure if the Talmud David heard that it doesn't say anywhere in the pasuk that David cursed Yoav this time for killing Avshalom. Right? I don't know if David, I have a hint that David never found out that it was Yoav who killed Avshalom. But I may give two answers to this question. In the Haftorah we're going to read in a few weeks, where David tells Shlomo, "You be smart, my son. You reward Barzillai HaGiladi because he brought me food when I needed. I want you to take good care of Shimi ben Gera, who cursed me a klal nimretzes when I was fleeing, right? And I want you to get that rat Yoav, right? You all know what I'm talking about, right?"
Mm-hmm.
So he says, because of what he did to Avner, and then he mentions another person.
And doesn't mention Avner.
You see, this man was also a nephew of David. His name was Amasa. Amasa was the head of Shlomo's army. Did I say Shlomo? Avshalom's army. He was the head of Avshalom's army. Avshalom's revolt had Amasa as the head of the army. Got that?
Hmm.
When the battle was over, David made Amasa the head of his army. Which is sort of like Lincoln making Robert E. Lee the head of Union forces after the revolution, after the Civil War. What sense does that make? Yoav was incensed. Why are you making Amasa? So the Mefarshim say that David did that because he knew that Yoav killed Avshalom against orders. So why didn't David kill Yoav then? You went against the direct order and you killed my son. So why couldn't he do something to Yoav? I don't know this, I'm guessing this.
Maybe his sister was still alive? Maybe?
Yeah, again, his sister was still alive and she said, "Hey, don't kill my son," like she did when Avner was killed.
Yeah.
That's a long time ago. I think because Yoav has the goods on David for what I mentioned about 10 minutes ago,
uh-huh.
and said to him, "If I die a violent death, my son knows exactly where that letter is because I kept it."
Isn't there, in my memory, isn't there a pasuk where Yoav says, would you rather have Avshalom alive?
Yes. Now that's whole, coming up. That's coming up. Yes, whole, absolutely. Yeah. So this is really what I want to look up.
But what happens to your son?
We want to look up.
You said, like, I mean, you kind of...
My son, I don't know, someone I know, anybody. We turn to Shmuel Bet Perek Yutet. Shmuel Bet Perek Yutet, page 770. Any Lubavitchers here? When David thought of appointing Avner to be the chief of his armed forces, that didn't sit well with Yoav. And if there's a lesson that people in Shmuel Bet should learn, don't cross Yoav. He knows how to kill you in the Chomesh. So, after the Civil War is over, like here in America, there had to be something called Reconstruction. You've heard of that?
Mm-hmm.
Now, they say, some political strategists say that that's why Abraham Lincoln chose a Southerner for his vice presidential candidate.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about Andrew Johnson. He was a Southerner. Right? To help him in the Reconstruction effort. You hear? He was from the state, the last state to secede, I believe it was Tennessee. So, and then he ended up becoming president when Lincoln was assassinated. So David is trying to do something similar. Let me make the head of Avshalom's army to head my army, just to show that I'm magnanimous and I want all of Israel back. We have to be one country, and I want them back. Just then, just as David appointed Amasa as king, as the head of the army, there was another revolt after Avshalom. Anybody remember his name? Sheva ben Bichri. Sheva ben Bichri. Right? David appointed Amasa to quell that rebellion. Right? And Amasa just didn't show up. I don't know. He was on vacation. He went to his son's Sheva Brachas. I don't know. He didn't show up. He didn't come. The reader is entitled to consider that Yoav killing Amasa the next day is not just because Yoav is Nogei B'davar and thinks, if he takes over the army, I'm losing my job, but that by not showing up on time to quell this rebellion, in the end, Yoav quells the rebellion. Remember, with the help of a woman inside the town?
Yes, it's always.
Remember that?
Yes.
So in the end, Yoav quells the rebellion, not Amasa. And the next day, again, Amasa, like Avner before him, was not on his guard against someone who should naturally want him dead. When you know someone wants you dead, you get a restraining order on that person. You don't let them. I mean, come on. So, once again, Amasa can say, I cannot believe lightning would strike twice in the same man. Everybody knows he killed Avner. So Amasa, what? You know what it says? It says in the Pasuk that Yoav grabbed his beard and gave him a kiss. And while he's kissing him, he's sticking a knife in his fifth rib.
Wow.
That's Yoav. So, in the Haftarah we'll read in a few weeks, David tells his wise son Shlomo, you remember what to do with Yoav. You're smart. He killed two men more righteous than he was. He killed Avner, and he killed Amasa. Now, why didn't he say, and he also killed your brother? So, some of Farshim say David didn't know, but I don't believe so. I think if David had not known that Avner killed Avshalom, he probably wouldn't have made Amasa to take over the army at that point. But who knows? I don't know. There could be another reason why David doesn't want to mention Avshalom to Shlomo. Why should I mention your competition? Why should I mention a brother of yours that almost ruled instead of you? I want to keep that out of the equation here. There's good enough reason for you to take care of Yoav without me mentioning Avshalom. Okay? All right. I mean, you don't get rid of the best soldiers, but David is trying to say, listen, I don't care. He's just such bad news. I cannot continue to justify having him head our armed forces because he's such a great military strategist. He's just bad news. Get rid of him. So the question is, so why didn't you get rid of him, David? So refer back to what I said about 7 minutes ago, that letter.
Right.
By the time Shlomo is king, that letter can't hurt anybody anymore. Probably.
Avshalom was killed. Yoav was the one who recommended David.
That's what I'm asking you to look at now on page 770. Okay. Two men are there to tell David what happened to Avshalom. Okay. The first one was Ahima'atz. Mm-hmm. Very, very speedy. And the second one is, it just says, the Cushi, in Ethiopia. So, the first man who reaches him is Ahimaaz and says to him, "Vayomer Hamelach Shalom lana pasuk chavtes." Verse 29. Look at towards about 2/3 of the way down the page, and he says, "Vayomer Hamelach Shalom lana arla Avshalom." Can you tell me if there's peace to my son Avshalom, to the Na'ar? V'yemar Achimatz, Reisi he'amon ha'gadol lishloach ha'zeved ha'melech Yoav esabdecha v'lo yedatima. He's hemming and hawing. David can tell he is
he's flubbing. He's fumfering. Right? He's just saying. He says, you know, I was at the front. I've got a lot of reports to make, and I don't have an answer for you. Lo yadati ma. Priyam Melech, Sov. What did you run here to tell me? Right. He knows Absalom's dead. Sov hisyatzev ko, stand here. Vayisov vayamot. So he stood in attention. Vinei akushi ba. And the Ethiopian came. Vayamah akushi is basera aduni hamelech. Ki shvatcha Hashem hayom miyad kol hakamim alecha. So he said, may the Lord judge all your enemies the same way that your enemies today have been judged. It's a very eloquent thing to say. So Vayamah melech. Elakushi hashalom lena'ar la'avshalom. So David, maybe he's talking about some, you know, hope against hope. He's talking about the other enemies that were fighting with him. What about Avshalom? V'yemer akushi yuka na'ar oyvei adoni ha'melech v'chol asher kumu alecha l'ra'ah. May what happened to him happen to all of your enemies. V'yugaz ha'melech v'ya'al al aliyat ha'sha'ar. The king became very agitated, trembling. Vayal aliyat ha-sha'ar. Now, it seems that this aliyat ha-sha'ar has already been mentioned twice in Shmuel Bet. One, that's where he saw Bathsheba from, back in chapter 11.
Uh-huh.
Two, in chapter 16, that's the same aliyah, it says, that Avshalom took the 10 concubines of David to show that the rebellion is real and I despise my father. Okay. Abravanel asks, excuse the digression, but Abravanel asks, what could make the whole nation of Israel, except for a small group of David, follow Avshalom after all that David did for them? Really saved, brought prosperity, brought justice. I mean,
he embraced them.
So he embraced them in justice. But then, so the Brahmanel says that the key is that the story begins with the words Vahimi Kates Arba'im Shana. This is towards, it means at the end of 40 years. This is towards the very end of David's reign. Right? And the revolt really was not against David, it was against a potential brother of Avshalom. Avshalom right now is the oldest child of David, who at least seems to want to be king. There is an older child, his name is Kilav, who seems to want nothing to do with any kingship. That's why Chazal like him very much. He's one of the four who never sinned, he's Shlomo's Rebbe in the Seches Brachas. But Avshalom feels, you know, the throne is mine. I'm not going to wait for my father to give it to me. My mother is not one of my father's favorites. So, you know, you're always worried that the favorite wife is going to get the king to make her child to be the next king. Right? That's more likely to be Bathsheba than to be Ma'acha Bas Talmi Melech Geshur. You get me? Avshalom's mother is the only one of David's wives not born to the Jewish people. Right? That's no raya. The king, Shlomo had a whole bunch of wives, and the mother of the next king was an Ammonite. Right? Na'amah Ammonis. But let's get back to our point, though, is that Avshalom at first made the revolt against a brother. It was Achitophel who convinced him to make the revolt against his father by taking those women on the patio. And it is the way of the amazingly keen, sensitive way of the biblical author to point out to the reader, keep your antenna up, that it was just at the same spot where David saw Bathsheba. And the prophet said, you did this secretly, I will make this happen to your wives in the open. You used a sword, you'll be chased by the sword. You broke up someone's home, your home will be broken up. Right? The Avshalom revolt is both of them together. There's a sword chasing him from his own family. So when this is all over, I understand David doesn't have to throw a party, doesn't have to celebrate. But when he hears that the revolt is over, he says, Vayefk, and he cries. Remember, he's from the chapter before, this was like a sort of, something built for David to stand on to greet the people coming back. Right? To greet as people are returning from whether they were against him or for him. They're all coming to say, okay, I'd like, you know, we want to have Chelek in King David again. Right? So he's crying in front of all of them, and he says, Ko amar b'lechto b'ni Avshalom, b'ni Avshalom, mi yitein musi ani tachtecha Avshalom b'ni. He says the word b'ni 7 times in this story. And he just says, oh, if only I could take your place. Okay? Now, let's go back to Shmuel Aleph for a moment. What caused Shaul's melancholy? What caused Shaul to go from such, what the Gemara says, was such a perfect, innocent specimen of morality? Gemara in Daf Chaf Beis in Maseches Yuma says that David was no match for Shlomo, for Shaul's innate goodness. What turned him? Absolute power can corrupt, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But what changed him?
The fact that his son Jonathan wouldn't inherit.
That he saw more clearly than anyone else. Only as clearly as the reader knows. Right? Because everyone tells him, what are you chasing after David? He doesn't want the throne. You know, of course, the reader knows by that time he does. He's been crowned. Camille, you had a question?
Oh, I was going to answer. That he is going to lose the throne. He thought that he's
okay,
going
to... Or that his son will rule. So let me tell you a little piece of Musar from the Nitziv. It's a little complicated, but the Nitziv in Parshas Pinchas, a very famous parish of his, wonders what is the place of Pinchas receiving a bris shalom. You familiar with it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Behold, I am giving Pinchas brisi shalom. As a result of doing this horrifically violent act of taking a spear and skewering 2 people together. It says it went out from him into her, and he went through her, and he mamish make light of it, but like a shish kebab, if you will. Right? So it's a very violent act, and he is now given this brisi shalom. So then the Tziv says the following. The Tziv says, no matter what good intention Pinchas had, and God seems to reward him altogether, but it's inconceivable that a regular person would not have nightmares the rest of his life as a result of doing this. Hmm. Right? Remember the halacha we've spoken about, that a Kohen who ever even accidentally kills someone should not duchen the rest of his life. A Kohen, the year of mourning for a parent, is not allowed to do it. Right? So it's quite amazing. So this brisi shalom is a bris of inner harmony, that Pinchas should not become a different person incapable of functioning, what we might call post-traumatic stress syndrome. Right? Yes?
So Pinchas had not acted, many more people would have died, and that would have been a greater...
Yes, it's a very, very important point to make.
Which
is that had he not acted, many, many more people would have died. So, what, you know, can you kill 2 to save... you know, I'm sure that the argument that our President Truman made at one point was, I'm not sure what the numbers that were killed by the 2 atom bombs in Japan, but he was saying, we're going to take these many lives, and you know what? Not just American lives will be saved. Japanese, they were going to fight till the absolute end. That emperor was not going to surrender under any terms, except some just overwhelming show of might like we did, and more Japanese would have died than this. I'm not saying there's no counter-argument to this. I'm just saying that is what I've heard was the argument on our side. So Pinchas is saying, listen, they say, no, this is not pleasant, I love doing this, but 24,000 people died altogether anyway, but this could have been much worse had I not done this. So, but Hashem still had to give him, no matter how much you justify it, they say that the ones who, you know, who flew the airplane in Olagay, it was called, that they suffered very much. And even though they knew this is the right thing to do, we're under orders from our government, and it's the right thing to do. It's still, it's not, you know. Okay, so that was the Brisi Shalom. A gift or a blessing not bestowed on Shaul. By killing off Amalek for the wrong reason, for personal gain or for to get a king's ransom or whatever else he did, that's where his melancholy nature kicks in. So what Dr. Sidorsky and what Camelia said is absolutely true. His change of framework and his change of mindset coincides with the time where he feels that my son is not going to rule after me. But it comes at the very same time where Hashem tells him that for these relatively minor infractions at war, nothing like David's breach in morality, you got to tell you, right? But for those relatively minor infractions at war, you're losing your kingdom, right? Because you can't have a king who is now doesn't have this Brisi Shalom after what you did, right? By not waiting for Shmuel the requisite amount of time, you're showing that it's kings who make war, not Eila Barecha Eila Basusim. No, that's how we make war too. And then by shifting the blame of what you did at the Amalek and putting it on blame on the people. So I once heard it said by Rav Aaron Lichtenstein that Shaul was not punished for not finishing off Amalek. Shaul was punished for fighting Amalek and not refusing to fight because he realized I can't do the whole job, then don't do it at all. But by fighting it and the way you did and killing off everyone, but you'll end up being that cruel to other people, and exactly what happened. Mm. He did what he did to we're supposed to do to Amalek. The Lashon is used on what he did to the Kohanim. So look, we're seeing of David here at this point of Shmuel Bet, I'm coining, I never saw this written in a book, of course, but I'm calling it the Shaulization of David. The Shaulization of David can be perhaps represented by a pasuk in Sefer Yeshayahu, where he says, "The people are saying that sweet is bitter, and bitter is sweet. They say mar is matok, matok is mar. They say what's dark is light, what's light is dark. What's good is bad, what's bad is good." Right? It's not right. You know, it's not just that you say bad is good. You say good is bad. Right? Like Hosea's pancake that's not flipped over. It's burnt on one side and raw on the other side. Right? So that's what's happening. That's what's happening to David here. By you godly Yoav, hinei ha-melech bocheva yisabel al Avshalom. Pasuk Bet. Yoav was told that the king is crying and mourning over the loss of Avshalom. Do you remember that what punishment David exacted for the man who stole the sheep, that fabricated man?
Yeah, he should be killed.
He should be killed, and in violation of Kim Le Midirabimine, if you know what I mean,
right.
Where the Gemara says that you're not allowed to punish someone with a capital punishment as well as a monetary punishment. He says, in addition to killing him, he has to pay the fourfold punishment for stealing sheep, as we know from Sefer Mishpat, Parshas Mishpatim, right? So the Gemara says the death penalty and fourfold? Chayecha, you'll lose four children. Mm-hmm. Torah is very exacting on people who behave this way. Right? There's even a difference of opinion who the four are, but okay. But David did definitely lose four children. Okay? And possibly five. Vatiya teshua bayom hahu le'evel l'chol ha'om. The salvation of that day was turned into mourning. All right, look, you don't have to throw a celebration with fireworks. But what are you doing? Ki shama ha'om bayom hahu le'mor ne'etzav ha'melech al b'no, because everyone heard that the king is sad over what happened to Avshalom. Like, Aizkanev, it's almost the Milad Mancha. They had to steal away. They had to, you know, they
robbed themselves.
Yeah, but it means that they surreptitiously had to make the way they did. You know, they should be coming and giving high fives to David. And instead, they're
steal away
to surreptitiously make their way home, so as not to run into the mournful king. Right? So the king continues. Vayamelech la'at espanav vayizak hamelech kol gadol b'ni Avshalom Avshalom b'ni b'ni. Right. Five Avshaloms and seven Benis. Vayavo Yoav el Hamelech Habayis. Vayomer. Now listen, this is really what this whole evening has been building up to this puzzle. Okay. The whole presentation is Yoav tells David, we're in Pasuk Vav, Yutet Vav. Hovashta Hayom es Pnei Kol Avodecha. You've humiliated your whole nation. You've come out about 80% of them to try to receive your face and beg your forgiveness for turning on you. And 20% of them who went out with you and would have been killed by Avshalom if he won. So what are you doing? Right?
Yeah.
Excuse me. This son of yours would have killed all your other sons. This son is the one who killed one of your sons, Amnon. Do you remember the word that you got when what you thought had happened that day? What was that? Do you remember? What did David think happened the day that Amnon was killed by Avshalom? David thought the word he got was that all his sons were killed. Remember? And then Yonadab said, no, it wasn't all your sons. It's just that rat Amnon for raping Avshalom's sister. Yonadab is quite the rat himself. He's the one who gave him the advice to do it, remember?
Right.
But Avshalom would kill all of your wives, all your Pilakshim, and all your other siblings, all his siblings. That was his plan. Right? So look what he says here. Do you remember what I said before from Yeshayahu? You consider mar matok, matok, mar, tov is ra is tov. Right? Look at the next pasuk. Look what you're doing. La ahava es sonecha. You love your enemy. Okay, he's your son. But worse, lisno es ohavecha. Your behavior is demonstrating that you hate the people who risk their lives for you.
Rabbi?
Yes?
But isn't the reader to take that as the moment that David found out from Yoav himself that he was the one who killed Avshalom?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure why that should be so. He's the chief of the army. Whatever any soldier does, you know, is a reflection on him. But I just think that the word did get around. You can't keep it from the king when unless Yoav killed that's there were 10 men who were clubbing him to death. The word had to get around. You know what I'm saying? The word is out there. Right? La'ava sonecha v'lisno esu'avecha ki gadata hayom ki ein lecha sarim ba'avodim ki yadata hayom ki lu Avshalom chai v'chulonu hayom meisim. It should be read as a question. Now there's an exclamation point. Right? He said, if Avshalom would live, all of us would be dead. And that would be good in your eyes? Is that what you want? Right? Get up. Talk to the people who have come by. Don't make them have to steal home. Ki b'Hashem nishpati ki encha yotzei miyolin ishitcha halayla v'rolach hazos mikol harosh ha'balach aminu rechadata. This is an exaggeration. He said, if you don't do this, what's facing you now is more evil than everything that's ever happened to you since your youth. Wow, that's an exaggeration. David has hardly had in his whole life too much time of peace. A short, maybe who knows, a few months in between the time he was crowned king and the time those dancing girls came and praised him 10 times as much as the king.
All right.
How much time is that? A few weeks, a few months? Everything else in his life is really, look, he's king. He must have had it's good to be the king for some time, you know. But it's just a very, very turbulent life, like Yaakov. So, Vayakam HaMelech Vayeshev Bashar. So the king listened to Yoav. David tends to listen to rebuke. Right? One time he did not, and it was right not to. I'm counting this at Ol Sitaf Torah, but the other time is where he it's not rebuke, but when Tziva and Mephibosheth fight over whether Mephibosheth was rebellious during Avshalom's revolt or not, David just dismisses the whole thing. And we discussed this already, but David being too quick to judge, and he suffered by losing half the kingdom by saying split the field. But the other person, we'll close with this, is a rebuke from one of his wives, who thinks that he was enjoying himself a bit too much. Maybe he bent the elbow a little bit too much before rejoicing. I'm talking about when the Aron was being returned, and it says that David was dancing with an ephod bad, and someone who knows how to be king better than he does, and he might admit that, right? She was the daughter of a king. She was the sister of a king. She was the wife of a king. I know what it means to be king better than you. I'm talking about
Michal.
So she rebukes him about how he's dancing a little crazy in front of the Aron. What's interesting is that this is just a very interesting textual point, is that when the narrator tells us what David was doing, it says he was mecharker b'chol oz. Right. He was mecharker, which means dancing like before the chasen and the kala, dancing with fervor. But when it says that she looked out the window, it says v'hinei David mefazez u'mecharker. Mefazez is crazy dancing. Mefazez is a spinning top. I mean,
exploding.
Right. Okay. Maybe pizzazz comes from this. I don't know.
I'll call the pay with a sibilance, sir. Our opening up, explosion, tzatzah, petach, petza, patzatz, patzar, blefatzeach.
It's the narrator telling us from her standpoint. You know what I'm saying? Any small dancing from this, Queen Elizabeth, imagine you go like the Princess Diana goes like this. You're supposed to do this? That's how you do it.
Right.
Waving like this is like, you're crazy, what are you doing? You're flailing your hands, what are you doing?
But it's if they are wrong. it's not with a woman.
So it's Mifazez Mechaker, because that's from her standpoint, Mechaker is Mifazez. Right? King, that's no way for a king to act. So there, David talks back. David does not say, you're right. I shouldn't behave that way. Right? Instead, he goes on the affront, and he tells her, that's your father is not king anymore. Your God took the kingdom from your father and gave it to me. How does that answer the question? What difference does it make who was king before you? If you're not behaving well, you're not behaving well. So what David is really telling you, and the Rambam talks about this, believe it or not, at the end of Hilchos Sukkos, in Hilchos, the laws of the Lulav and Esrog, when he talks about how you're supposed to rejoice in Simchas Beis HaShoeva and not to think that it's beyond you because you're an important person. And the Rambam says, see, even King David Melech Yisrael, who's greater than, who has more kavod than the king, and yet he lost it. So the So David tells her that this is certainly worthwhile behavior, in my opinion, for a king. And that's why your father isn't king anymore, because he wouldn't ever do anything after becoming king without making a focus group. If this is okay, is it right, right to go now? Is it right to wait? Mm. Is it right not to wait? Is it right to do this to Amalek? Is there your father is not king anymore. That didn't work so well. So now I'm doing things my way, where if I think it's right, I'm not going to take a focus group and wonder, how are the people going to view my dancing? Okay, we'll stop with this. Next week, we will be doing Natan. So practice, look ahead, chapter 12 of Shmuel Bet, Natan Hanavi. We'll be doing Nathan the prophet.